Hey, this is Richard Ellis and my Buying Tech Podcast, Episode 2, From Tech Trash to Treasure, recorded 13th of August, 2017. On this week in Buying Tech, we'll see how well your business is handling a sometimes hidden risk. What happens when you dispose of technology equipment you no longer need? Think you do it right and there's no risk? Let's see. We'll also briefly talk about how to choose what should go to the cloud and ponder the near future of cloud and talk about a couple of cool things in the world of tech at the moment. You can send us questions or ideas at feedback@buyingtech.net or catch us on Facebook or Twitter at Buying Tech. This episode is about secure technology equipment disposal. But first off, we have a couple of questions from listener Rob from last episode about how do you work out what workloads to move to the cloud? And also, is the cloud the future for most businesses? That's a really complex question, so we'll dive straight into it. Firstly, let's look at why the suppliers love the cloud. It's not uncommon at the moment for suppliers to get every 5 or 7 years a big deal to refresh some hardware, install some software, that kind of thing. It's infrequent business, it's unpredictable, it involves a lot of bidding and customized solutions. Cloud allows them to move this to a low touch in terms of sales, predictable monthly revenue stream. This revenue stream is not only predictable, but could grow as usage grows. That's a good thing for the company as it allows long-term planning and resourcing. And they can reasonably expect an upward pressure on usage as data use from your company grows. Now, the solutions being sold are also harder to quantify. There's less clear physical underlying servers, software, staff, things like that, which can be quantified quite easily. And it moves to a less clear service, which is harder to determine the absolute value of. Now, one of the key underlying costs is the cost of the hardware. Over time, I'd expect a couple of things to happen. Firstly, that the cost per unit of hardware measure, so it might be megahertz, the cost per gigabyte of RAM, gigabyte of storage, goes down over time. We really should be seeing that reflected in your monthly pricing, especially after a few years when new servers might be deployed. In addition, any competent supplier is going to hugely work on automation to remove any of their staff costs. Some of those benefits should be passed on to you over time because you can be sure that what it's costing the supplier to provide your server today is much, much lower than what it cost them to provide it 3 to 5 years ago. So at the end of a 3 or 5 year period approximately, I'd be asking your supplier what's happening with the prices if you're not seeing your prices going down. Suppliers are going to no doubt try to keep their prices the same or maybe even raise them, might pass on some insignificant value or increase your RAM allocations and do things like that, but I'd be looking for a significant change in price. If you start to see new entrants or other players in the market offering significant better value, that's a pretty good indicator that your pricing might be stuck in old hardware pricing costs. And that maybe the value driven from automation efforts and efficiencies haven't been passed on to you adequately. Unfortunately, it's the nature of the beast. And whilst suppliers will go into sort of revenue protection mode, that gap between what they're charging and absolute market value is how new entrants come in and sweep away all their customers. Now we're going to have a look at some of the concerns for small, large and enterprise sized businesses. Before we run through a list of questions all cloud users should be asking themselves before moving, to see how realistic a view you have and also how ready you are. So for small businesses, let's say you have a mail server, a file server, maybe a few specialized applications like real estate software, staff rostering, account software, and so on. You might have different drivers. You might have resource and skill limitations. You might be seeking to reduce the cost of an outsourced IT help company that you're using. Although your volumes are relatively small, you might gain quite a bit from economies of scale because your cloud provider can acquire their equipment and services far cheaper than you can. So moving that email server and storage server to the cloud might make sense. So long as you factor in what happens when your usage goes up or down for that matter, you need to model it out. You need to ensure that you don't get any surprises. For example, if your storage doubles annually, something that's not too uncommon in the industry, your monthly bill might look very different in the future compared to your initial bill, which you based all your business decisions on. You also need to counter that with the fact you might not be paying for as much IT assistance, you might have reduced electricity, maintenance, and so on. But also keep in mind your communication link cost might increase quite a lot. if you're volume limited on your data link, you'll find your volumes are going to go up, and as a result, your costs might go up. And you might also need to improve your data link as time goes on. But the upside is that you can also focus on your main business more, which for a small business person is what it's all about. Be super careful with any core systems that users expect a fast response time from, and which instantly stop your business dead if they aren't working properly. These are the ones where additional delay or unexpected downtime caused by the cloud or simply your internet connection going down will have a significant impact on both your users and your business. For that reason, a hybrid solution might be best. That core system and any things like storage that it depends on might be best kept in-house. Other more general systems like email and general file storage, etc., may be okay to move to the cloud and benefit from the ability to expand easily, but not be harmed by a slight growth in response time. That would be the best of both worlds. That only works if you can get an acceptable quality communication line to your business. For example, if the only thing you've got is a slow DSL line, that might severely limit your capability of using cloud. For example, large file transfers might become so painfully slow, they grind the rest of your connection to a halt and take far too long to be practical. Now, large and enterprise businesses might have some other drivers, like freeing up a lot of space or even selling off a whole data center and reducing other large costs. But again, be careful with core workloads that require fast response times, and be careful of critical data and where it goes and who might have access. A hybrid solution would be recommended. It might be that bulk storage can go off-site, low priority back of house systems can go off-site, those sort of things. Now, if you have servers and storage that are already highly utilized, there's lower benefit from moving to the cloud, as one of the benefits is sharing resources. If any of your servers are well utilized, then sharing resources may not be as cost effective. The only reason it might make sense to move it is if a major hardware upgrade is due and you decide to avoid that by moving to the cloud. The pure scale of enterprise level cloud use, think thousands and thousands of pretty large servers, negates or minimizes many of the benefits. And to realize the maximum benefit, more care should be taken on what workloads are moved to the cloud. Not just what should be moved, but also when it should be moved. Something that's not worth moving now might be worth moving in 3 years' time when the hardware starts to get old. So to maximize value of your cloud migration, it might be better to plan it off as a gradual move over the duration of a full life cycle of hardware, let's say 5 to 7 years or so. So that means that things that are quite old already might be evaluated for moving now, and things that have just been installed recently, you won't even look at for another few more years. If you do it that way, it also spreads the risk so that there are no big bang migrations and less likely a very difficult time for your business if things don't work out as expected. Just Google it and you'll find lots of examples. I would run the project in annual plan chunks broken down into work packages, and all later work stops with that supplier until each work package is successfully migrated and operating within reasonable parameters. If they fail, then the rest of the work doesn't exist for them unless you give them an exception. That means no big bang 3 year migration projects. The supplier salespeople mightn't like it, but we are managing your capability to function as a business. And if they are confident of success, then they can be confident a steady flow of work packages will flow over quite a number of years. If they price such an approach high versus a full commitment, full binding commitment that is, then that's where their competitors get a chance to be considered. It also means that the hardware that you're going to consume is built for you as you go, and you don't have the silly situation where to get the boxes deployed and recognize the revenue, 3 years worth of hardware is deployed up front, and some of it you might not be deploying anything on for 2 years. That can also deny you the benefit of future hardware releases, which might involve a significantly lower cost per CPU cycle, per gigabyte of RAM or gigabyte of storage. I don't think cloud is anywhere near ready to provide a future-proof solution for most businesses, as the economics don't line up, including with industry hardware pricing over time and with what your business can afford to pay as you experience reasonable growth. We see way too many instances of bill shock. As a general guide, assuming you don't have significant gain to move out of a data center right away or some other horrific contract, I would suggest this for any business regardless of scale. Workload evaluation, each workload should be evaluated to understand current resource usage of the server, that's RAM, CPU, storage, to assess how efficiently the hardware is already being used. If it's heavily used and still functioning well, you're probably getting good value already. If underutilized, cloud might help raise your average utilization. I'd also factor in a prediction of future resource needs for every workload. Will storage increase every year? What happens if sales double and you need twice the compute and RAM to handle the transactions? Understand and have pre-agreed pricing that goes higher and lower than you expect. model it with scenarios so that you just don't get surprised when those bills come in. They should be really quite predictable. This, in addition to performance expectations not being met, are probably the major cause of people pulling out of cloud. Consumption-based bills really should be predictable if you understand your contract and you also understand your business. It's not hard to model scenarios that are outside of what you expect and understand what that all means. Network connectivity requirements for each workload should be considered. That includes things like latency, but also for telcos, you might have network elements all over the place on their own dedicated networks, which might not be visible, or you might not want them to be visible from the cloud provider's network. End user system response requirements, you really need to understand the system in question and how cloud might impact the end user experience or the ability of the application to function full stop. Where the device is in its hardware life cycle, is it due to be replaced soon or have you just bought it and it doesn't really make sense to turn the thing off? Consolidation on existing hardware. Look, if you have got the common scenario where each project gets budgeted separately and they go out and buy a shiny new server, because that's what techies do, deploy their system and are only using small amounts of RAM and CPU and storage, can you consolidate other of your applications onto those servers that still might be early in their life cycle? It just raises the efficiency of it all and might invalidate moving across to the cloud for some time. The criticality of your business. Is this a true business critical system where the loss or slowdown of access due to it being moved elsewhere will cause real damage to your business? If that's the case, for now, I would leave it in-house. Email might be one exception to this, where email solutions in the cloud have proven to be pretty reliable. Now, can the system actually be migrated to the cloud, and also has the supplier migrated systems like this before? You could also ask the manufacturer of your software or system that's being moved because they can give you some indication perhaps of other customers that have moved to the cloud and how well it went or didn't go. Also note there could be software license issues. You really need to be careful. Some software suppliers have specific cloud licensing models. They also might expect a payment to be made because you might be deploying multiple copies of their software temporarily during the migration. There also might be some concerns where their pricing model might use per CPU core pricing, which might be based on the physical machine, not the virtual CPU cores allocated to that software. That means that you might have pricing for one core, for example, that costs you $100 and it's being put on a 16 core machine. And even though you're only using one core for that application, they're going to charge you for all 16 cores just in case, because you could theoretically use them. You really need to understand that licensing really, really closely. Can you also keep your existing hardware and systems in place and perhaps disconnected until enough time has passed so that you have confidence in the cloud deployment? A number of people have been saved by this, especially with their core systems, which I've suggested you don't move anyway. Also, do you have a clause in the contract that allows you to back out any migration that doesn't work well? If it doesn't operate within parameters, if the response times are too low, the reliability, or any other problems that are unforeseen, the supplier should work with you at no extra cost to back it out. It's a failed migration. It's them failing to do their job. They should be helping you restore things back to the way they were beforehand. And you shouldn't have to pay any cost penalty as a result of their failure. Also, is the data so valuable to your business that really you'd rather keep that data in-house? Do you know where the supplier is sending the data? Is it encrypted in transit and at rest? Probably not, but I suggest that would be a very wise thing to do with your core data. If you have a look at a recent example, the Swedish government had a major potential security breach, and I say potential, with pretty much every aspect of their driver's license and vehicle-related data being unintentionally made available to supplier staff in a couple of different countries where cloud and cloud support were being provided. The supplier users had access to more than what was expected. There were not adequate safeguards in place given what they did have access to. And that included data on people in the witness protection program, undercover operatives, special forces in overseas locations, and details of critical country infrastructure. At least three people in the Czech Republic had access, apparently. And they also had the ability to remove any traces of their access. So in reality, it may never be known if the data was copied or accessed. That data included, and it's just absolutely unbelievable, the names, the photos, the addresses, and the whole database of basically everybody in the country. There was also apparently some issues where emails were sent out in clear text identifying or asking people to identify the secret parts of the database after the fact. Just not good, a disastrous project. I see this as both a supplier and customer caused issue. The customer clearly didn't do the due diligence during the project to understand the database and related processes. The supplier in question doesn't appear to have realized they had access to data they shouldn't have either. And that supplier is mature enough to know that significant contractual and procedural safeguards are necessary to protect that type of data. Neither party appears to have had 100% clear understanding of the project's data contents and or didn't provide protections adequate for that data. So in that way, I would go through each workload to see how it may benefit and what the risks are. Then it can really be an informed decision, not a wholesale leak based on third-party promises. Perhaps to be fair to most cloud providers, if your company is buying an out-of-the-box solution, which non-enterprise and government entities will be buying generally, buyer beware definitely applies. Make sure that the solution being sold suits the workload, or each workload, that you intend on putting in the cloud. There's no use rushing out and buying a car from a car salesman and then complaining afterwards that it's not a bus. I think the success cases at the moment are often software and security as a service. Both are likely to stay. Both models seem to work well with cloud, with not too much impact from growth, so long as the supplier's growth and shrinkage pricing is reasonable. In the future, I'd expect to see cloud providers reduce their margins as this will change the value equation and also change the risk to value ratio, which will drive more business to them in the long run. At the moment, pricing models are tending towards being very much in the supplier's favor. There's a premium on cloud as it's the latest thing and sold as having extreme benefits. Benefits which some are starting to realize aren't quite as promised, especially at the upper end of town. They will need to pull back and ensure their promises match customer expectations and experience more closely. An example is the Commonwealth Bank of Australia. In 2012, headlines screamed that they were now saving tens of millions of dollars in a 12-month period by moving aggressively to the cloud. In 2017, headlines scream, public cloud costs push Commonwealth Bank to OpenStack. After initial enthusiasm, they realised at scale, cloud doesn't add up, as we covered last episode. They then changed their mix of public cloud, private cloud, and bare metal servers to optimise. One size doesn't fit all. I think the gloss will wear off, bill shock and bad stories will reduce growth and increase buyer caution. A number of commodity cloud players will emerge as front runners, used for compute, storage and network, with some specialty toppings added to the mix from some niche players such as security as a service. The front runners are already appearing, but more rationalisation is pretty likely. Cloud can be good, cloud can be bad. As buyers of their services, it's incumbent on us to do the due diligence before trusting all of our IT systems to a remote solution, often characterised as having not very clear commitments on what's delivered, such as latency, the potential for increase in usage to drive prices well beyond what was expected, data being stored in other locations and with unknown people having access, and the potential for a very sticky solution, which is hard or very costly for you to move on from in the future. It's really important to remember that a failed or messy cloud migration doesn't help you, doesn't help your supplier or the industry. A wise, transparent, realistic approach always works best. So now we're going to look at something that is often underappreciated within many businesses and as a result not managed very well. It's in relation to secure technology equipment disposal. What I'm going to try and do is convey all the complexities that need to be considered anytime your company gets rid of surplus technology equipment. For small companies, some basic steps can resolve the risk. For large companies and enterprises, discipline is needed, as a threat is really quite genuine. Imagine you're a pretty typical company that has sensitive information stored on some of its computers and servers. You have a network connected via routers that connects everything up together. And users that access these systems using PCs, laptops, and probably mobile phones as well. It might be you have internal communications, your secret source recipes, confidential information that can be used to steal, embarrass, or harm your clients. That's a pretty normal scenario for even the smallest company up to the largest enterprise or government, and how most businesses function today. Now, let's imagine that you're a good IT citizen. You have security, you have electronic door locks, you have firewalls, you have strict password rules. You even ensure that you're running antivirus and also that the latest patched versions of your operating system and applications are always in place. Now let's ramp things up a little more, because you can't be too safe these days. You have above average security, you've deployed DLP, which is data loss prevention tools that track data going in and out of your systems and look for anomalies, also keep records. Let's also throw in the latest intrusion detection system, which uses heuristics and pattern matching to detect suspect behavior. Your approach might be, let's be really safe and assume that the system's already compromised and watch for signs of misuse of the system, access rights, or networks. Well, what could possibly go wrong? Ask yourself a question. When we remove some hardware, what happens to it? Later, we'll run through a number of potential risks and see if what happens within your business mitigates these risks. Whilst everyone focuses on the design and operation of your key systems and the deployments of shiny new systems, when the budget's finally approved for that exciting new IT system upgrade or replacement, the old equipment often doesn't receive the care it should, given it could be a monumental risk to your company and clients. So today we talk about secure technology asset disposal. We'll have a look at some of those risks and the steps you can take to minimise that risk and other risks related to disposing of old equipment. It's not safe to simply sell them on the grey market to a company that gives you some money and then on-sells the device. It's not safe to throw them out in the bin. And it's often not safe to sell them directly via eBay or other methods, unless we take some very particular steps. Our goal is simple, to safely dispose of any used or surplus assets and any data on them in a way that protects the company and the environment. As a side effect, it may be possible to generate some income via harbour assets that have been resold on the grey market. But it must be clear to all that the primary purpose is the protection of data first, the environment second, and potential profit third. Now, placing the environment second might sound contentious to some. I do that for two reasons. Firstly, because the scale of environmental risk posed by a single device being mishandled is significantly less than the potential risk that a single device can pose to your company and clients. And secondly, because experience has shown that the addition of specific steps to manage environmental risk can be put in place, and when done well, will have negligible impact on the environment by the use of resale, comprehensive recycling, and only as a last resort, waste. The reuse of existing equipment also helps ensure the maximum benefit is obtained from existing devices for which significant resources have already been used in their manufacture. Recycling or throwing them out is a terrible waste and only drives the consumption of more resources to make similar devices. So let's take a look at typical data threats that can be in a normal mix of tech equipment. Old mobile phones may have easily recoverable data, including private contact details and potentially emails and files. Personal computers can have large amounts of information, and even if protected by password, unless they're encrypted, they may easily give up their data simply by plugging the disk into another PC. Servers and storage arrays may have massive amounts of critical data, the very core of your business, that anyone with a little nous may be able to get into. People in or buying from the grey market may have exactly that mouse. Routers and switches may contain information in their config files about the confidential internal parts of your network, IP addresses and similar that a pro can misuse to map out your internal network and find other targets to attack as their IP address is now known. It's for this reason that the military might often take time to recreate an identical router, but with fake IP addresses in it, before sending for help from router companies. So at no time does the router company support staff see confidential network information. Thumb drives, external drives, CDs or DVDs and memory cards may also be present or hidden in any of those devices containing any manner of software or data in a small, transportable and universally accessible format. Hopefully by now it might be clear that these are all some very serious risks that need precise management, on par with the best security practices you might use in your live systems. So let's take a helicopter view. The company has existing systems that will be replaced or are no longer of use. That means the company is going to remove these items from its asset lists, which hopefully you have. So that gives us a hint that in this process, it might be necessary to notify someone, perhaps asset management or finance, that some assets are being disposed of. If you don't do this, your company might be risk reporting the value of their assets or depreciating non-existent items. So now that we have that settled, the next step is making these surplus assets go away. That's where things start to get interesting. Let's break it down further. On any given device, which could be PCs, routers, servers, storage arrays, USB drives, CDs, and more, we need to do six different things. We need to decommission and remove the device. We need to move it away from their original location. We need to identify the assets in detail. We need to determine what the data and other risks are for each of those assets. We need to take action to eliminate those risks. And we need to dispose of them all, ideally selling it, recycling it, and only as a last resort does it go near landfill. Some or all of these can be outsourced, especially for decentralized deployments where volume is large. For smaller companies, doing that all in-house isn't hard, but you should follow strict processes and include reporting. We need to protect against a number of threats, both internal, within the supplier, and external. For decommissioning, care should be taken to turn off the right boxes. Laugh if you will, but it wouldn't be the first time that somebody's turned off the wrong box. For this reason, if outside parties are brought in to do it, I suggest an in-house person physically touch and label the devices that should be taken out, so there's no room for error. If you're going to manage data wiping in-house, then before turning off the power, you will need to run a wiping program. We'll discuss these and the various ways of how to use them later. But let's just say you wipe it and you record the details of exactly what device has been wiped, for example, the serial numbers on the drives. This really should follow a robust process, so there's no room for error. So if you're outsourcing a lot of these tasks, you or your provider need to deliver the goods to your provider's premises. These premises need to be secure and the items checked in so that there's a chain of custody from being picked up at your location all the way through to wiping. And the method of transport's also really important. There'll need to be pre-agreed secure transport companies, assuming they outsource the transport. And the routing of these trucks should be such that the trucks are not stored in depots or otherwise left unattended without good reason. They should always be locked at all times, obviously. The assets are then checked into the secure facility. Then the assets need to go through some identification down to serial numbers, and that can be component serial numbers like hard disk drives, so that they can be tracked throughout the whole process. The asset should be assessed for risk. Risk can include configurations, data, software, firmware, labeling that's on the device, which might identify your company or your clients. Processes should then be in place to address these risks one by one. Identifying stickers should be removed. Firmware should be checked with your device contracts, and you'll need to do that, not your supplier, to determine if it's licensed to you and must not be passed on to others. Parts of any system or any storage media should be identified and the data destroyed according to a strict set of rules. This part is important and we'll go into it later. Be really careful to remember that formatting in most instances does not delete data. It deletes the index for the data, and multitude of free software tools are available on the internet to quickly recover all the data on formatted drives. Now, at the end of the process, an asset might be suitable for resale on the grey market. Alternatively, it could be used for spares if the whole unit is not usable. Recycling of what remains can recover valuable elements, including gold. And anything that remains may be a very small percentage of the total and taken to landfill. Experience has shown that it really is a tiny amount that needs to go to landfill if this is done properly. If outsourcing this task, I would not be having an exclusive agreement with anybody. I'd ensure that orders must come via standard channels and be formal, that work cannot be subcontracted without approval, and also you have the right to inspect their premises on request. What you really should be able to do is walk over to their so-called clean equipment pile, pick up a hard drive, ask them to bring it up on a screen and have a look at the data tracks and see what's there. We'll go into what you should be seeing a little bit later when we go into the wiping algorithms. If the supplier will be accessing your or your customer's sites, really they should be obeying all your occupational health and safety rules, induction rules, security processes, and you should be indemnified against any of the losses caused by their actions. The supplier must not pick up goods that are not specifically identified in an order, even if directed to do so by someone on site. A separate order must be sent. This is a really important safeguard to stop the diversion of assets that aren't appearing on the systems to other paths for disposal and sale, bypassing all the processes. The supplier may need to prepare the goods, which might be bubble wrap, pallets, all that kind of thing, if you're not going to do it for them. And unless they are also installing equipment, the equipment really should be moved to an area away from the live equipment, so the supplier does not have to be near live equipment, and they should actively stay away from live equipment. It's possible that the people coming into the data centers might be more removalists and truck drivers than people that are used to operating in that environment, so caution should be needed. A criminal check on any staff handling your goods pre-wiping would probably not hurt. And also, if there's any issues at all relating to staff issues for people that are working on your agreement, especially when they're related to theft or fraudulent activities, you really should be notified straight away. And if there's a potential breach of contract, loss of equipment, loss of data, breach of any kind, you should be notified immediately and without delay. It should potentially be before any investigation is concluded. Investigations can add a lot of time, and you might not be able to mitigate your losses in the meantime. It's not uncommon for a transfer of title and risk for these items to be made to the provider at some stage. It's really, really important that it is clear that at no time does transfer of IP, data, or software licensing occur. These always stay owned by the customer. This must be stipulated within your contracts. The exact point of asset title and risk transfer should be stipulated. It should probably be upon supplier taking possession of the asset. That way, if it's lost at that stage, they're responsible and liable. This excludes the data and software, as we mentioned earlier. Agreement on how any revenue might be generated by the secondhand sale of equipment should be clear and transparent to all parties. Any fees for wiping and so on could be taken out of that amount. The cost for wiping should be within the contract in addition to any other fees for transport, pickup and so on, assuming that they're doing it for you. Take care with tax, as VAT or GST or a tax liability might be generated at a time which is later than the handover of goods, because the value of the goods might not be known because they haven't been assessed yet. In Australia, we have a concept called a recipient-created tax invoice, or RCTI, which recognises that sometimes the purchaser of goods determines the value of the goods, not the seller. It's a little bit unusual and worth paying attention to, so you don't dig yourself into a hole. Reporting is vital, and any good operator will have comprehensive reporting, including an asset-by-asset history. Every step of the process, from pickup to check-in to evaluation, wiping, sale, recycling, disposal, any asset that turns up somewhere that it shouldn't, or any data that gets out from that asset can then be traced. Summary reports obviously should be sent to you every quarter or that kind of thing, in addition to per-order reporting at the end of the process. Reports on recycling benefits, for example, e-waste, amounts should be provided, including the total weight of products picked up by the supplier. And any environmental benefits, such as value received due to greenhouse gas reduction and so on, should reside with you as the customer. A certificate of wiping should be provided for each order, itemizing the IDs of individual hard drives and that kind of thing, so that everything is traceable. The liability for loss or damage due to data breach should be high, and really millions per instance for big operators. Where an order is an instance. If you're going to place a massive order, for example, emptying a data center, then you'd probably want to consider a larger figure unique to that order. This is their core business. If they're not confident that their chain of custody process all the way through to wiping is bulletproof, then really you shouldn't be using them. Data safeguarding is critical to this contract. It may not hurt to have the supplier securely hold devices for a couple of days, a few business days maybe, before wiping, just in case someone sends the wrong device and realizes it shortly thereafter. However, there should also be an upper limit which says in all cases the data must be destroyed within a set time frame, for example, 14 days. The default for any given device is that if it can't be guaranteed that the data was destroyed, then the device must be physically destroyed such that the data cannot be recovered by any known means. For example, degaussing and shredding it to a very small size. Now, in a moment, we're going to get on to recommended methods of wiping data. You'll notice that we complete wiping passes with all zeros. And that's done on purpose so that at any time, a scan of the disk will show if it has been wiped. If random characters were used on the final wipe, it might not be possible in some situations to determine if the disk has been wiped, because encrypted or compressed disks may also present something very similar to random characters. Now, there's a multitude of methods of wiping disks and other media. There's a particularly good brand name called Blanco, B-L-A-N-C-C-O, who make data wiping products that really are quite something, and it includes asset tracking and that kind of thing. Now we're going to step through, I guess, different kinds of media and look at how they should be wiped. Now, when we look at how they should be wiped, we're considering a couple of things. The degree to which they can be wiped, and also the degree to which the data is recoverable using either software methods or hardware methods. So let's look at your standard hard disk drive or solid state drive. These are the ones that are most common in everything from PCs to servers to laptops and everything. At least two passes should be done with random characters, followed by the last pass writing all zeros to the disk. For storage arrays, which are made up of many, many hard drives, at least two passes with random characters, again, followed by one pass of all zeros to the disk. For flash drives, including memory cards, so these are your USB thumb drives and memory cards that are found in phones and cameras and that kind of thing, physical destruction of the drive is best. And for routers and switches, all firmware and configuration data probably should be deleted, especially with some suppliers licensing the firmware to you. A reuse of that firmware by a third party after it's been sold might be in violation of your license agreement. For all other assets, at least two passes with random characters followed by another pass of zeros. And for CDs, DVDs, flash memory cards, and other removable, rewritable media, or even non-rewritable, physical destruction, such as the data, is not recoverable. For example, shredding is recommended. For memory on devices, such as firmware or settings, delete the data, format the memory, reset to factory. Some of these might be embedded within hardware and not be easily written over randomly. Care should also be taken on early drives, for example, ones that are 15 gigabyte capacity or less. In that case, a 7-pass random write, finishing with zeros on the last pass, might be preferable. For really important data, you should retain the right to nominate that the device is physically destroyed, either by yourself or the supplier. For example, it's not uncommon for banks to state that all hard drives must be physically destroyed. So there you have it. Hopefully by now it's clear why exactly disposal of tech assets is both complex and risky. It's a little bit more than just chucking it in the dumpster out the back. And it is also a genuine risk to your company, but it can be managed. These steps are easy once the process is established and are far better than finding your company databases were found on a device bought on eBay and plastered across the news. Now we're going to go on to some cool stuff. If you're looking for a tablet upgrade, the Samsung Galaxy Tab S3 is out, featuring an amazing screen, a stylus pen included, and also some cool functionality like the ability for sharing of notifications between your Samsung phone and your Samsung tablet, which is great. So if you get a WhatsApp message on your phone, it will actually pop up on your tablet if you want it to, and you can respond as well. Also in the news more and more is the CRISPR-Cas9 gene editing tool, which is allowing very accurate turning on and turning off of individual genes. And the sky is pretty much the limit of where that can go, because the genes are pretty much controlling everything within us. And now they have the ability to press all the buttons they want. So stay tuned for some amazing discoveries in that. Some of them might be a little bit scary. And China's also announced that it has managed to send quantum encrypted data 1,200 kilometers, which is a hell of a lot further than other people have managed, which is a little bit scary because quantum encrypted data is probably going to be uncrackable. Not just that, but if anyone even glances at it, the recipient can tell it's been glanced at and it can even self-destroy. So that it's just simply not possible to get access to the data. What's also a little bit frightening about quantum computing as a whole, which China's focusing a lot of money and effort into at the moment, is that it's not really currently going to have too many good uses for the average Joe. When quantum computers get good enough, they're going to destroy all cryptography and encryption as we know it today. That means all your bank data, all your private anything is going to be just annihilated by decent quantum computers, which means that the only people who are going to have encrypted data are going to be quantum computer owners. And I get the feeling that's probably going to be limited to states at the moment. And I don't know. I think we've got some big battles coming up. But the moment these major quantum computers come online, they are just going to invalidate all encryption as we know it today. That might sound cool. It's not cool. All your banking and everything is protected by encryption. The whole lot will be laid bare, potentially. So quantum computing, is it good for the average Joe? I think it remains to be seen. At the moment, all I've really seen are threats to security and things as we know it today. As we know, a fair few governments have asked for backdoor keys to be put in current encryption today so that they can snoop on anything they want. What's scary about this is that if they ban quantum computers for anyone except for state operators, in order to have encryption that is safe, you're going to have to use the state operator's quantum computers to do the encryption. And any other encryption you use, that's normal encryption we use today, will probably be able to be broken by quantum computers very easily. Which means that the state will win. They'll be able to force everybody to use encryption that has backdoors in it. They will control the encryption. All other encryption will be largely invalidated. And that is potentially scary. I frankly have no problem with the whole concept of going before a reasonable judge and getting a warrant. I don't like the idea of the states hearing everything and seeing everything. Well, that brings us to the end of episode 2. Hope you enjoyed it. Don't forget to subscribe. You can find us in your favorite podcast app by searching on BUYINGTECH. You can also find us on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram at Buying Tech. or send us an email at feedback@buyingtech.net with any comments and suggestions. Bye for now.